Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player.
This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, the guys are talking Jason Bourne.
Oh my god, it's Jason Bourne!
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction!
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is not here. Abe's having his own fun this weekend. He couldn't make time for this podcast. That guy, we're one episode away from our 250th episode. He's like, I'm gonna take a week off. That was his logic. That's what he said. But anyway, Out Now is a film podcast. I'm kidding. Abe, we love Abe. He'll be back. We'll get him here. Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I normally discuss new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 249, and this week we're talking Jason Bourne, the fifth Bourne film, the fourth starring Matt Damon, and with returning director Paul Greengrass. The last film with Matt Damon was Ultimatum back in 07, but they're back. They brought things back. And joining me today for Jason Bourne, we have from Wrath Reviews, it's Jordan Wrath.
Hello.
From Initial Reaction Reviews, we have Mr. Philip Price.
What is going on, everybody?
And from the Movie Film Podcast in Zachy's Corner, we have Zachy Hassan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Glad to have all you guys here. Like, three of you make up like a little bit of Abe, so that's good. That's good for me. But also, just three of you separately make up three great guests. So I'm good right now. We got what we need here.
We shall try to live up to Abe.
Yeah.
And his greatness.
But yeah, glad to have you guys all here. This should be a fun show. We got a lot to talk about. We got a lot of Jason Bourne to catch up on. I'm glad that the beginning of that movie had a whole, you know, family album showing us just, you know, mug shots of him throughout the history of his years. That didn't happen. But anyway, let's do some show notes stuff here real quick. Let's see. Our Comic-Con episode went up last week. I was at Comic-Con this year. Anna was there as well with me, and we got to do some panels and what have you. And Abe and I, we discussed all things Comic-Con related last week, as well as a review of Star Trek Beyond. But if you want to hear more about Comic-Con, listen to that show. That's up on iTunes now. Also on iTunes is our Aliens commentary track. We talked about the Aliens in honor of its 30th anniversary. It's a great movie, and we had a lot of fun talking about it. And iTunes reviews and ratings, it is good to get those. It helps out our show. Zachy, you have a show, right? You have the Movie Film Podcast, right?
I do.
That just got its like 100th episode in, right?
We just dropped episode 100, yeah.
Isn't it great when you get iTunes reviews?
It's fantastic.
Yeah, so, you know, if you want to log on.
No better feeling.
If you want to log on to iTunes and search Out Now with Aaron and Abe, or the Movie Film Podcast, but mainly Out Now with Aaron and Abe, you can go log on there. You can give us a star rating. You can add a couple words or two as well to form a sentence. It'd be great. Great to get those. And yeah, let's move on now. Let's try to set the tone for the podcast here and the place I know about it, where we ask each other a few questions, get some answers, get some banter going. I want Andy to know more about you guys, so that's how we play. Know everybody. And I'm going to ask a question right down to you guys. What would be the name of your super secret assassin program? We've had things like Treadstone, Blackbriar, and now Iron Hand. Do you guys have a name that you would have for your secret assassin program?
This one may or may not be in shameless plug upcoming sequel to my first book.
I was going to bring this up in the review, actually, your book. So yeah, go on. I want to hear more.
Wolfpaw.
Wolfpaw. Nice. I like it.
Wolfpaw.
I like it. Wolfpaw.
See, that sounds legit, and the first thing that popped into my head was SoundCloud, which I already know obviously exists, but that was like, why would they name it that? I don't know, but it was like, that would be cool.
In one of those classic comedy versions of Bourne, they would name
right.
SoundCloud, and everyone would like make fun of the CIA directors, like, haha, that already exists, sir.
You're exactly.
That's what they say to his face. You're old.
It's a classic,
I'd want something innocuous, like frying pan or something. Something
Operation nobody, Frying Pan.
Yeah, nobody would think that's like a secret assassin program.
And that doubles as their training too. They hit each other with frying pans.
Exactly.
Toughen up. Okay. I like this. Wolfpaw, SoundCloud, and frying pan. These are all the next tapes
coming up in the next Bourne movie.
Yeah, I'm writing to Paul Greengrass right now.
Now you probably have the CIA listening in on us after we named all those.
Oh, then it won't be hard. They can spread it faster than I can.
Yeah,
be easy. I was gonna send it to Greengrass though. I know his email. It's shakygrass.com@gmail.com. So We'll move on now. That's how you play. No, everybody. Let's move on to now quickies. Each week on Out Now, we have one main movie leak that we talk about. We saw the movies that we see during the week that we saw on that quickies. And let's go to Philip first. Philip, have you seen any other movie recently you want to make mention of?
This week I also saw Bad Moms and The Killing Joke were my other two this week. I was really surprised Bad Moms is sitting at a fresh score on Rotten Tomatoes because I thought it was pretty terrible. But if you are a fan of Catherine Hahn, it's worth checking out because she gets to go like full tilt Catherine Hahn in this movie. But
it's currently the only new movie this week that's fresh, which surprised me too, actually.
Crazy to me, but yeah, no, it's one of those kind of broad middle of the road comedies that feels like it's, you know, been pushed off an assembly line. It doesn't look great. It kind of looks TV quality like, and you know, like Christina Applegate and Clark Duke pops up in a small role, and they have some pretty good, you know, little things to contribute, but overall it was just, you know, kind of lazy and predictable and just trying too hard to be funny but not really being that. Like, I smiled, but it was mostly because of Catherine Hahn, and but other than that, it just felt kind of flat,
which is a bit, because I get the idea of, like, you know, you make kind of a counter programming movie as well as one that moves to a different audience, yet, you know, has the same kind of humor you'd expect from other comedies of that ilk that mainly star men, and it's a shame that it's not, you know, something that's more worthwhile.
Yeah,
totally. Like, I saw the trailers, like, nothing makes me laugh in this whatsoever. It's like, all right.
No, and it has plenty of good ideas, like, you know, approaching it from, you know, three moms' perspectives and moms in different, you know, times in their life and everything like that. There's plenty of material to work with there, but it's the guys who did, they wrote the first Hangover and then they wrote and directed 21 and Over. So they basically just have,
so,
you know,
so they're moms. They know. Yeah. They have the idea.
Exactly. They know what they're, you know, they know what psyche to explore correctly there. But no, it's kind of what you'd expect from those trailers and nothing more.
Jordan, what movie have you seen recently?
I think the only other one I saw recently was Star Trek Beyond this week. It got a little bit delayed for me because I was traveling last weekend.
What'd you think?
And I liked it. I'm one of the people that apparently it's not cool anymore to like Into Darkness, but I still really enjoyed Into Darkness, and this one was a lot of fun, but I felt like it lacked the weight that Into Darkness had. I was never scared that anyone was going to die or that anything wasn't going to come out exactly how you thought it was. It kind of felt like a filler TV episode to me, but it was still a lot of fun.
That's the weird thing about this one, right? Like, it, because Abe and I had very basically the same opinion where it does what it's supposed to do, but it just, there's nothing special about it, I guess.
I'd agree, yeah. It was like if the first one was like a pilot episode and the second one was kind of like a season finale or something, this one feels like, well, we got to put episode 21 out, so let's go ahead and put this out. Hmm. I don't know. I might try to see Nerve today, too, because I heard that that's surprisingly better than people thought it might be, so we'll see.
Zachy, any movies you've seen recently?
Yeah, I saw Don't Think Twice by Mike Birbiglia.
Oh, yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. I don't know. Have you seen that one?
Not yet. I really like Sleepwalking With Me, his first film, so I'm looking forward to catching this one as well.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's about a sort of the inner drama that happens with an improv troupe. And it's just refreshing. I didn't know anything about it going in, so it was, you know, that's kind of the best experience, watching a movie where you have no idea what it's about, and so you just let it unfurl at its own pace.
It's a good, solid.
Yeah.
I saw a couple things. I did see Nerve, which also came out this week with Dave Franco and Emma Roberts, and this is the one where for the listeners that don't know, this is the one where there is an online game known as Nerve, which basically dares the player to do just random things around town for money, and the dares get increasingly challenging or dangerous or whatnot, and Emma Roberts joins this game, and she eventually partners up with Dave Franco, and things get hectic as they go along. I thought this movie was pretty good. It was better than I expected it to be. The premise is pretty silly, but it does a good job, at least in the first hour, of kind of filling up what kind of fun you could have from a premise like this. I think in the last act, it kind of goes overboard with what it tries to do, and I don't think it quite nails the ending, but I think it's fun enough where the intended audience will enjoy this movie most, and it works overall enough to kind of to make you have like an enjoyable experience with. It's from the guys, was it Ariel Schumann and Henry Joost, who did Catfish, as well as a couple Paranormal Activity movies. And they certainly have like a read on the kind of the age group they're going for, like how people would act in this world of like, because obviously it's a commentary on social media to an extent. And it does a good job of kind of giving you like what people, like it's a bunch of like 20 somethings playing high schoolers, but still it kind of captures the energy you'd expect from that kind of thing. And I also did see Batman the Killing Joke. Philip, you said you saw this too?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I I was not a fan of it.
Yeah, I wasn't either. And I wasn't, you know, really familiar with the comic until recently when I knew I was going to go see the movie. I was like, man, if there's any time I really need to catch up on this, I better do it now. And yeah, so it was just, but no, after, did you go to, yeah, obviously you went to one of the,
yeah,
like the
theatrical
events thing. Yeah.
Well, they had it at Comic-Con, but I didn't see it at Comic-Con. But,
oh, okay.
But they did, but they played it like two nights in a row. So I saw it on the Tuesday night theatrical screening of it.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I did. And yeah, no, I was definitely, I enjoyed the like behind the scenes stuff before and after it more than the actual movie. I think it was just,
I could agree, because before I had like an interview with Mark Hamill about just his career as a voice actor and getting into Batman, and then after they had a whole focus on the music of the film, which actually I did like the music of the film, and I can see why they'd have a behind the scenes look at it, because it's a good orchestral score.
Yeah.
It's just the movie itself. Like I am a fan of the graphic novel. I have the graphic novel. I'm a fan of it. It's not my favorite Batman story, but I enjoy it. But I think one of my main issues with this one is what I saw in the trailer going in before it, is that it didn't look very good, like visually. Like I feel like the animation felt very kind of stiff and blocky, where Brian Bollard's animation in the Alan Moore written graphic novel, it's very creepy. Like it adds to that atmosphere of the story being told, and losing that takes away a whole aspect of the film, I think. In addition, the story's not, like there's a prologue involving Batgirl that's not very good, and then the kind of the way they handle this story is just, it feels worse because of that Batgirl story that precedes the film. So it just made it a shame to me.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, besides all the Batgirl stuff that, you know, they attempted to do, and I understand why what they were trying to do, but yeah, the animation was definitely the biggest disappointment to me, just because of, you know, and I've heard some people say that, you know, maybe it wasn't meant to be watched on big screens like that, and, you know, so maybe that made it look worse or whatever, but still.
I mean, I watched the trailer on my computer.
It didn't, yeah, and it still, yeah,
it didn't
exactly
look good then either.
That was the first impression I got when I watched the trailer, too, was like, man, this is just, I don't know, amateur looking, cheap looking,
which
kind
is
of even,
because it's like a seminal Batman story. So you'd think, okay, they probably want to take their time and make this, you know, one of the best ones, because it's
an
iconic story and a Joker story as well. But it just feels rushed, which is like, why would you rush this one of all things?
Yeah, totally. Like even just thinking about the one they put out a few years ago, like the Dark Knight Returns animated version of that graphic novel, and it just seemed like leagues better than, you know, the animation-wise, what they did here. And it was just like, what happened?
Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah, you'd think they would have poured a lot of money and effort into this one.
They got, you know, they got Hamill to come back. They got my Batman, Kevin Conroy, in there. I mean, they have all they need. I don't know what happened, yeah.
You know, I think the problem is that when you have Brian Bolan's artwork, that's, you've set an unreachable bar. When you're saying you're going to try to adapt that, I almost wonder if they might have been better served by doing like those motion comics.
Which is, yeah, I know what you mean, which is weird, because I remember a Batman Year One. I'm not the biggest fan of that adaptation because it feels too much like a motion comic, but it's like, well, at least they captured the artwork. It just feels,
yeah,
isn't it? I think it lacks because it didn't really transcend the medium too much. It just feels like, okay, it's just in action now, which is fine, but it's,
yeah.
But Dark, like Philip, you mentioned Dark Knight Returns. That's one I think they really did a great job on. The animations, it captures the kind of spirit that Miller had without making it too much of a emblematic revision of that. And it, you know, it takes its time, and it's also a very long story as opposed to Kill
They gave
Joker.
It room to breathe. I mean, two parts. Yeah,
yeah. They didn't cut it down, which I was impressed with. They made it a whole two part event, and it's now like you can find it on one Blu-ray as well now, which is awesome because you can watch the whole thing at once. But yeah. A shame, yeah, Killing Joke. But,
yeah, I imagine a lot of people are disappointed by that one.
I mean, yeah, it's certainly not a minority opinion. Like the reviews are fairly mixed on this thing, especially because of, like the whole Batgirl stuff and the situation that presented itself based off the Q&A that, have you guys heard about the Q&A that followed at Comic-Con?
I heard, was it Azzarello?
Yeah, Brian Azzarello, who, is his own good comic right author in his own right. Like he adapted this story for the screen. There was a Q&A and words were exchanged, and Azzarello was not in the best of moods to take certain criticisms in the Q&A, and it did not help matters much. There's more you can read about that online, I'm sure, if you search for it. But yeah, Killing Joke, I believe it arrives on, actually, I'll get to that in the Blu-ray section, but it arrives on Blu-ray and DVD next week in stores, and it's available online now for like purchase on VOD. But yeah. That's how no quickies. There's no Abe. It's like I'm losing bits of this. But anyway, let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk, where we discuss one of the newest movie trailers of the week, when it's coming out, what we thought of it, what have you. And this week, we have the trailer for The Great Wall. This is a new movie directed by... what's his name? What's the director's name, Zach? You know, offhand?
I don't remember it off
Zhang Yimou, I believe?
Yeah.
That's right.
It's director of Hero and... number of good ones too. Yeah, Zhang Yimou. I got it. Okay, Zhang Yimou. It stars Matt Damon, because if you need a movie about the Great Wall of China, it stars Matt Damon. And House of Flying Daggers is the other movie I was trying to think of from the director. So Matt Damon and Willem Dafoe, of course, as well, are among the many that are involved in the building of the Great Wall of China, and as opposed to keeping out Mongolians, which I think we're mostly familiar with is the reason for this wall, it's actually a fantasy mystery film centered around the building of the Great Wall because of monsters on the other side of it. Sorry, Zaki. Zaki, what did you think of the trailer for The Great Wall?
I mean, it's kind of, it's like that old Sesame Street skit, like, which of these things is not like the other? I'm just like, what's Matt Damon doing in this movie? And I'm, I don't know anything about it other than what's in the trailer. So maybe there's a perfectly fine explanation for it. But just the
incongruous... it'll be like a retired like Civil War veteran or something like that. It'll come over.
Well, it's written by Edward Zwick, so it's like
there you go. For it has to be
the Great Wall. What he did for the samurai, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. The trailer didn't. I mean, it didn't wow me. It just looks like a CGI spectacle to me.
Jordan,
I feel like. It's almost trying to be like a Pacific Rim prequel-ish, even though they're not related. But I also question what Matt Damon is doing there. And the first line he speaks in the trailer, I could have sworn that he had an Asian accent. And I was like, that is really offensive. But I think as the trailer went on, I was like, I don't think he has an Asian accent. But like, I don't remember what he says the first thing. But I was like, that was definitely just like... the worst Asian accent ever. I'm on the wall, pun intended, about it. I think it could be fun, but it also could be really stupid.
Philip?
Yeah, kind of along the same lines. The trailers, I didn't know what to expect from this. Had heard about it, but it was just kind of meh. I don't know. Like, it is obviously very odd to see Matt Damon, in a movie like this. Like, his presence was striking in a weird way. It could be a big action spectacle type movie that could just meant to be fun, and I could enjoy it. Damon's kind of on a roll right now as far as, movie stars go, with this weekend and The Martian last year. So maybe he could hit another one out of the park and surprise people. I don't know. But yeah, the trailer definitely didn't, suggest anything exceptional.
Yeah, I can largely agree that it didn't present me with a film that I'm like, man, this is the movie to see. At the same time, the idea of the story humors me enough to be like, I want to see what's going on in this, because they've built the Great Wall of China, and now there are monsters on the other side of it. And I remember hearing about this movie, just hearing like they've built, it's a movie about the Great Wall and the mysteries around it, but I had no idea it was going to be like, crazy monsters that were going to be around it. So now with that in mind, and the idea that Zhang Yimou is direct, who did Hero and did, he's made beautiful movies in the past, so I'm intrigued what that's going to be like, to see a movie that involves the Great Wall of China with monsters from the guy that made Hero and a lot of these wushu martial arts films. Matt Damon being a part of it, that's a tricky thing. I get that, it's the kind of movie where I'm sure it requires a large expenditure. I believe it's the most expensive movie China's ever produced, and I believe it's like a co-production with America. And I guess, yes, that requires an American presence in some way, but it it is off-putting, especially, you know, kind of now. But I try to wonder, like, what about, like, when Last Samurai came out? Was that, I know there was similar kind of thoughts there. It's like Tom Cruise stars in The Last Samurai. It's like, all right, that's a thing. Now we have, you know, the fantasy monster version of that story. And I don't know what to take away from that.
Was this originally supposed to come out at the end of this year?
It was, yeah. It was originally like a November release, and they moved it.
Yeah,
to
and
November.
Yeah. So when I saw the like synopsis or the summary, the plot summary, I was like, oh, this will probably be, you know, a heavy drama or something about Damon going to China and, you know.
It'll be like Avatar, but with monsters.
But yeah, no, the monster thing totally threw me but you do get some pretty cool shots there at the end that obviously the director has a flair for that. And so, I mean, definitely interested in seeing it on the big screen.
If I had to guess, I would say both the movie, you know, maybe requires some visual effects work, and because like what Doctor Strange and Fantastic Beasts are both coming out around November, it might have had a lot of competition to be playing with.
Yeah,
that'd be my guess of why they tried to end it. You know, if it's moving to February, it's not as if like they thought, man, our Oscar-worthy Great Wall movie's not doing as well as we thought it was. But we'll see. It's got quite a few screenwriters here, I noticed as well. I mean, you have Edward Zwick's one of them, but you also have Max Brooks, author of the book World War Z, and you also have Tony Gilroy, you know, the screenwriter of the first few Bourne films, among others. Because I guess a movie involving the Great Wall of China and monsters requires lots of screenwriting to make that work. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see on this one. The Great Wall arrives in theaters February 17th next year. So, yeah, we'll see. And with that, I think that's the end of trailer talk, and we can move into our main review for Jason Bourne.
I remember everything.
Remembering everything doesn't mean you know everything.
Tell me.
We've just been hacked. Could be worse than Snowden.
Facial recognition got a hit.
Jesus Christ, that's Jason Bourne.
Why would it come back now?
That should have been some of the trailer for Jason Bourne. Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass have returned for another Bourne adventure. This time around, Bourne is brought out of hiding due to a CIA hack. Some globetrotting ensues as Bourne learns his new information concerning his past, and various members of the CIA, including Tommy Lee Jones and Alicia Vikander, want to once again try and get a handle on him. There is also an asset played by Vincent Cassell with a personal vendetta against Bourne on the hunt. What will Bourne do to keep himself alive, and what kinds of chases will ensue this time around? Zaki Hassan, what have been your thoughts on the Bourne franchise as, you know, this far, and what did you think of this new film?
So, you know, I'm a fan of the movies, but I think something I realized as I was going about rewatching them before this new one is I pretty much watch them and I'm done with them. Like, there isn't a lot of rewatchability in them for me, and I didn't like Legacy at all, but I was looking forward to this one. And I strongly disliked it. Like, I was unprepared for how much I disliked this movie.
All right.
It nearly put me to sleep.
We'll get back to this. Philip, your thoughts on the franchise?
Yeah, no, I really like it. It's one of those ones that kind of got better for me with each entry. Ultimatum was, you know, really good and a, you know, solid capper for the trilogy, so I was hesitant going into the new one. But, you know, given it was the same, you know, director and Damon was back, I was anxious or excited for it. But no, I really enjoy the trilogy. I rewatched them again this past week, and you know, I did kind of forget how much I did enjoy them, but they're solid little action thrillers.
And what'd you think of the film, this new film?
The new one, I enjoyed most of it. For the most part, I enjoyed a lot of it. There were a few moments where I was kind of you know, in and out of how much it was grabbing me, but the it was a little disappointing that the story wise, instead of going in kind of a new interesting direction, it kind of retread some of the same ground as previous entries.
Jordan, you've dabbled in spy fiction yourself, correct?
Yeah.
And are you a fan of these kinds of movies in general, you would say?
Yeah, I think the Bourne, especially the original trilogy, we'll just pretend like Legacy didn't really exist. The original trilogy, I think, is one of the best action trilogies there is. And Ultimatum, like Philip said, is really probably like one of the best trilogy cappers that I can remember. It's just a really great film. I think almost what hurt this film, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. I enjoyed it than most of my friends, or more than most of them that I went with, surprisingly so. But I think that was just mainly because I like Greengrass's direction, and it was very tight editing, and I really enjoyed that. But I think from the time that Ultimatum came out to this one, we've seen just a plethora of copycat Bourne films, some of which have not been so good, basically most of the Taken trilogy. But then you also have James Bond, who basically became a British Jason Bourne, and most of those were pretty good. And then you have Ethan Hunt from Mission Impossible with some of his best missions yet. So part of me almost thinks that this Jason Bourne film is, had it released like maybe a year or two after Ultimatum, we all would have been like, oh my God, this is another great Bourne film. But because of a little bit of time passing, I think he has some stiffer competition than he did when those movies were released.
All right. Good round of summation of films. We got a bit of a spectrum here, which I enjoy. I like this film. I would not say it's my favorite of the Bourne franchise. The Bourne franchise, I'm a big fan of. The first three is bad. I think we're all on the board of that Legacy is not a good movie. I think we're all in agreement on that one, it seems. Despite the efforts of Renner to get his chems, I think we're pretty fair in saying that's not much of a memorable movie. I'm a fan of the franchise. I think it's one of the best action trilogies of films. You know, best like three set action films that have been made in like recent years as far as kind of a trilogy of action films go. I do rewatch them quite a bit because I think they're just fun to watch. I think Damon's a good lead in these, and in this film, I did like it. I'd say it's the least of, compared to those three, I think it's lesser, but I still think it's quite good. I think it managed to hit a lot of the spots that I like in Bourne films, but because it's hitting a lot of the same stuff, it doesn't make itself, you know, better in that way. It just makes it more of like, hey, remember this? Well, this is still cool if you watch it like this, and that's what I like about it. I mean, it's not too much to compliment, but at the same time, it is very competent in its filmmaking. I think Greengrass, I like Greengrass's style in general. When he came on for Supremacy and followed up with Ultimatum, I think my eyes work to his movies. I know some people could, you know, aren't as big of a fan of his shaky cam style or what have you, and they're like, Jordan, you've said, there's certainly been a lot of imitators that have not done a good job as far as replicating that style. Why that seemed to be the thing to latch on to as far as things to replicate in action movies, I'm not sure, but I do like when Greengrass does it. He does it well for me. I think Damon's still good in this film. I tend to like the control room sequences of like various CIA analysts like shouting at each other tough guy dialogue. That tends to work for me, and it usually involves very good actors. In the past films, you've had Brian Cox and Chris Cooper and Joan Allen. Now you have Tommy Lee Jones and Alicia Vikander, and it's like, all right, like this is fun to see these people in this kind of role where it doesn't require much as far as a personality. As far as character depth, personality is just kind of there and how they deliver things. But I like those scenes. And, of course, the action. The action's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, solid action in this movie. But let's go. I want to go to Zachy now. Zachy, why did you hate this movie?
I think hate is too strong, but I would say, like,
why'd you strongly dislike this movie?
Up to the edge of hate. You know, I'm just, it's kind of like, after 9 years, what's the reason to bring Damon back? Because his whole thing, he's like, I'm done. And you expect there to be a higher bar than this. I mean, it's the same movie again. And it's like, we've gotten three versions of this story already. And for me, I mean, the end of Ultimatum is the end of Jason Bourne's origin. And the idea that we keep peeling the onion further and further down, and oh, here's another like secret of how he became this assassin. It's like, you know, we've figured that we've got it. Let's move on now. What's next for him after having uncovered his origin? That was my beef. So I just felt like the trilogy being what it is, it's, you know, like you guys said, Ultimatum wraps up the trilogy. So unless you're doing something truly new with the character, why do we need to dig up this dirt and do the same dance?
I would say, I guess it stands to reason that there's like two ways to approach a sequel to Ultimatum specifically, where one is you do more of the same, or the other is you take the series in an entirely new direction. Obviously, Legacy tried that, and that did not work. It didn't help that, you know, you lose the main character that you've, you know, involved your franchise in.
Yeah.
And replace it with some new guy that's, you know, a drug addict. But
I mean, you know, the problem with Legacy, it's funny, the analogy I made is like back in the early 90s, after Raymond Burr passed away, they kept making Perry Mason movies. Mm-hmm. But they would have like Perry Mason's friend. And it's like, oh, you want Perry Mason? Well, I'm his friend. He's out of town, but I'll take your case. And you're like, well, I don't want to see Perry Mason's buddy. I want to see Perry Mason. That's what Bourne Legacy felt like to me. Because it's like, hey, Jason Bourne's around the corner, but hey, we're like following this guy.
And but there's certainly like there's an idea they went for. It wasn't accomplished very well, but right. Like it you know, it tried to do something different. This, I can understand why a movie would be this way, where it just tries to do more of the same. And the issue I don't have is that I don't mind having more of the same. I like this series.
Sure.
And it's I guess if you compare it to other, well, even something like James Bond, where that's like a franchise, especially in the kind of, you know, the earlier days of Bond, you're getting essentially a lot of the same stuff, just in new locations or what have you. And I'm very fine with that. And I feel like as opposed to other, you know, spy thrillers or action epics that are part of like a series, this is not one where I necessarily need too much diversity. I feel like if I'm getting Jason Bourne fighting people with random objects and car chases and whatnot, that's kind of sufficient for me.
Sure.
Any thoughts on that, Philip?
Yeah, well, see, I kind of fall in the middle there. Like, I was hoping that the story would go differently because I found the way they did peel back the onion in the second and the third one to be really compelling and interesting. And so when I didn't expect them to do that more, I kind of liked that they did and gave us, you know, more layers beyond the initial beginnings of Treadstone and everything. But the thing that like bothered me the most was like, I always felt like this movie's biggest obstacle after 9 years was going to be what was going to make Jason Bourne come out of hiding or come back. And that the kind of reasoning they give for that is, you know, delivered by Julia Stiles pretty quickly and kind of dismissed as far as the justification involved for him getting, back into, on the CIA's radar. It was a little disappointing because it felt kind of like it just felt like weak justification for it. But then again, like I liked the action. I like seeing Matt Damon in this role. Once the story got going, I did enjoy what it was doing and what layers it was peeling back and what new insight we were gaining about the character. And I also found what Jordan said to be kind of interesting because if this had come out, you know, like 2 years after Ultimatum, that would have even been before Ghost Protocol. And the subplot about with Riz Ahmed's character about the, you know, the Google Facebook like company and, you know,
I kind of wanted more of that.
It felt like it was only in there to make this Bourne more contemporary. And I felt like if this fourth Bourne with Damon had come out, you know, sooner, that might not have even been a factor, or there might have been some other type of aspect that they were trying to use, because these movies, going back and watching them, they do tend to use like, you know, timely things that as far as the CIA goes and what they're trying to address and stuff like that. And, you know, obviously this time, you know, privacy and security is a big issue, but I wanted more of that too, or I wanted it to more like, you know, naturally come from the story rather than feeling as tacked on as it did. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think there's something admirable, I think, about the idea that the Bourne, which they address this multiple times in the movie, but they say, you know, it's a post-Snowden world, and they talk about this hack, but it's like, it's bigger than Snowden. They kind of really want to mention that to make sure they timestamp this movie, apparently. But there's something I think is admirable about Greengrass, who, you know, wrote this movie with Christopher Rouse, who was also the editor on this film as well.
Which is cool, yeah. Like
he also won an Oscar for Ultimatum for his editing there.
Yeah.
But like the idea of incorporating the kind of the time period they're in or like where they exist, but without doing too much to make, you know, much social commentary out of it, I thought was kind of, I appreciated that. I felt like I didn't need a Bourne movie necessarily to, you know, tell me what I'm supposed to think, because it's right. At the end of the day, it's just an action movie. It's grounded in a level of real world stuff, but it's not trying to do too much in that realm. And for me, that works. I don't know if another version of that would make it any better in my eyes. But
I guess I just wish they'd have incorporated that you know, storyline more into whatever the consequences of Bourne's actions or Julia Stiles' character's actions were going to be. But it was fine. Like, I liked seeing that. And in saying that, I thought by the time the third act started, it tied it together really well.
Yeah, I would agree. I think if anything, I know you're talking, you say you like the kind of the way they peel the onions back, so we'll stick with this metaphor. The way they keep peeling the onion back as far as Jason Bourne goes, I would say that works for me to a point. It's just there's some key connections between certain characters that I kind of wish is like, really, did it need to go like this far as how tied in certain people are to other characters? That kind of bugged me. That was like, okay, that seems too much of making Jason Bourne like the chosen one in all of this, where it's compared to just being like, I like the mystery and ambiguous nature of this character of just a guy that woke up shot with no memory. That's inherently interesting to me. And then as it goes on, it's neat to like see more of that, like Supreme. And that's why Supremacy, I think, is probably the best of these movies, because it gives you just enough more, but still, you know, functions as a straight ahead action movie where Jason Bourne does enough to convince you of, you know, his physical prowess while also giving you just enough of that drama that Matt Damon's good at, you know, through his, you know, emotional state or what have you. But Jordan, you like a good action sequence, right?
I do, yes.
What did you think of the action in this movie?
I really enjoyed it. I think I agree with you when you say that Greengrass kind of films it in a way that speaks to me. I know I typically hate shaky cam, and I think in the opening scene there was a lot of it, and I was like, oh, great, this is just going to be nauseating. And I think that was really the worst of it, because he really does get a rein on it later on, and he uses it to better effect than most other directors do. Other than Greengrass, I think it's Olivier Megaton. I mean, is so great at shaky cam, let me tell you.
Jackie, I think you posted a video of Liam Neeson. It takes like 27 cuts for him to jump over a ball. That, yeah, and Taken 3, there's like 27 different cuts of him, like just a scale offense.
That's stupid. No, but it worked well, and I think for me the biggest thing was the editing and the pacing in each of the action scenes. I very much hate action scenes where I don't know where each player is or like what they're doing. And it was done in a very good way where I knew where everyone was at all times and what they were supposed to be doing, where they were going. I think of that really kind of intricate Berlin scene. I think that was probably my favorite scene in the movie, and it was pulled off really, really well. And then you have the kind of crazy Vegas scene at the end that is very unlike Jason Bourne, but it was still really entertaining. And I thought that was done really well too.
Well, Jason Bourne understands that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's why he went for it. Zachy, given that you disliked the film, what'd you think of the action in it?
You know, I liked the opening action scene in Greece. I found that pretty engaging.
Yeah.
The Vegas thing at the end, I was kind of like losing the thread by the end of it. So I think that I think I found myself aging out of the ability to process Paul Greengrass's editing by the end of the movie.
I do like that each of these films presents like Bourne with an asset that he, you know, his rival in these films. Like the first one, we had Clive Owen. The second film, you had Bones. You had Carl Urban.
Yeah.
The third film, you have Edgar Ramirez. And this one, we have Vince Cassell. And each one of those, there's always like, especially in these last three, because the last three seem to always involve a car chase in the finale. It's as if the Bourne identity is like, okay, we have a car chase in the middle of the film, so each film preceding, it's like, we need to end this with an epic car chase type thing. And each one of those films generally has Bourne and the other asset like give a stare at each other. It's like, oh, I know who you are, I'm coming after you, that kind of thing. And it happens once again here, and it leads to this crazy Vegas car chase, which just... it leads to just absolute destruction in a way where it's like, I don't know how necessary this is, yet I was still very engaged by this. My lovely girlfriend Anna was very happy to point out that the Dodge he was driving would easily have been destroyed in this car chase, but it's still entertaining to watch just like tons of cars being demolished by a SWAT vehicle down like Vegas Boulevard. I don't know what that process is like to film, but I admired the kind of the strength Greengrass had to be like, you know what? I just want to destroy tons of cars in this movie. And he went for it. That's something I admire. Leading up to like a really brutal fist fight that I can always get behind because I just want to know, what's Jason Bourne going to grab to defend himself? And once again, he grabs something really cool to defend himself.
Frank Pan.
I don't want to reveal that right now, but, you know, it's a good one. I will say, I think among the things I do like about this franchise in general is John Powell, who I think is maybe the MVP of this series. His score for these movies, I always tend to like. I really like there's a propulsive nature to these films, where I think other films, having so many scenes set in like various computer rooms where there's just like shots of people's like saying on the screen, get squad on this team, move group two over here, I can't hear comms, like that kind of, like other movies could make that, you know, less interesting, but for whatever reason, I think John Powell's score in these movies and just the way Greengrass moves his stuff around, it just works for me. I tend to really like the soundtracks of these movies. Any other thoughts on
the score? They move things forward quite a bit. It's one of those things where when you're listening to it in the moment, you're like, oh, this is kind of like a generic action movie original score. But then you realize how kind of invested you are into just the sound of people walking around in a crowd, like very, very boring things usually. And I agree, that's something that I think I noticed once it wrapped. I was like, that really had a, like you said, propulsive, I think is the best word, score that moved things forward. I think it made it feel a lot quicker than it really was for me.
It's one thing to watch Matt Damon like walk, you know, power walking through crowds, but it's another thing to watch it while there's like, you know, just like just that happening. It's like, yeah, all right. Matt Damon would walk all day through these crowds.
I like that Powell has kept certain thematic motifs going throughout, and you hear those reoccur, and then that adds to sort of the emotional connection you have to the whole series.
I don't think enough movies take advantage of that these days, honestly. I mean,
totally agree.
Especially you know, the age of like these Marvel movies and the DC movies, like you would think that like Iron Man and Captain America and Thor, they'd have like iconic kind of themes that go with them, but they really don't. Like the closest you get, I mean the music in those movies is generally like fine, but I can't think of like memorable scores besides maybe like Captain America: The First Avenger and now Avengers by default, like where they, you know, you really kind of get behind the themes of these movies. Like Iron Man even used to have AC/DC, but they don't even play that up anymore. So it's like you think these iconic characters we're watching would be like, all right, like there they are because I'm hearing their music, but you just kind of get a. You get music that appropriately fills out what you're supposed to hear around these people. Where someone like Jason Bourne, or even like, I don't know, Mission Impossible obviously has a theme because it's, you know, from a TV show, but like certain movies, you know, from a certain time, you get a sense of who these people are just from hearing the music come up. Indiana Jones is an easy example. I mean, there's like, you don't get that nowadays. And yeah, I do think that Powell is, you know, he's stuck around since the first film at this point. He wasn't on Legacy, but we don't talk about Legacy here.
Then, you know, Newton Howard did that score, and he kept the thematic stuff alive.
He tried to keep up the main like Bourne theme in some of those little bits in here.
That being said, I think it's interesting that you're completely right that like some of our biggest movies right now, like the Marvel and DC movies, don't have themes, but then. That one theme for Wonder Woman, the like guitar riff,
has
completely emerged as like her theme song, and it is like, to me, that's so badass. Is her like guitar riff theme song?
Because it's so like wildly different from everything, or it's just so brooding.
Yeah.
The rest of Hans Zimmer's score, Hans Zimmer and Junkie XL score for Beavs Dodge. I mean, there's so. So it's like, oh, this is wacky and different. I want to hear more of this action. And that
I could really see her being like one of the first superheroes to have like a very iconic theme song.
In a while, for sure.
Yeah, in a long time.
Because like I can think of like Superman and Batman. You know, those guys that were really good in their movies before they were together. those scores are really good. And it's not like Hans Zimmer's not slouching. Like, they're not bad scores. It's just like, yeah, it doesn't really... It's more of like, here's tones that remind me of these characters when they're on screen more than like, this is the song that defines this person. That's not what I get from some of these scores these days.
Yeah.
More about Bourne. I will say, there's a lack of... You know, the first film has Bourne like bantering with Franca Batante's character, which is odd because, you know, he's teamed up with her. And the preceding films, you know, they lack that because he's mainly on his own. But he still gets a few lines in here or there just that, you know, make you smile a bit. I don't think there's any sense of humor in this movie as far as like Jason Bourne goes or anybody, except maybe Tommy Lee Jones. Am I wrong in that?
No, I mean, I Tommy Lee Jones is being Tommy Lee Jones here, yeah. But I kind of like it, and I don't mind it at all. But no, I definitely noticed that as well. I read an article prior to seeing it that I think it said Damon had maybe 25 lines of dialogue total in this movie, which, I mean, yeah, obviously he's on his own, it makes sense, and kind of makes his performance, I mean, I think he gives a really good performance here that might go a little underappreciated just because he doesn't have a lot to say. But I mean, you totally get where he's at in his headspace and, you know, along those lines. And I mean, obviously he's done it before, he knows how to do it well, but yeah, even more so in this movie, he conveys, you know, his mental state really well, with not having as much to say. But no, yeah, it was definitely, I did notice that probably because I read that article before, but you know.
Yeah. I saw the same headlines and I tried counting, but it's like, no, it's probably more, I think it's more of like someone's like one of them said that in like an interview. And it got like exaggerated into like a headline of he only has 25 lines, but I think it's more of just like he doesn't need to it's not like he's talking to himself. It's like, oh, I need to go connect this cord here to disable the security camera here. Like, it's not like he's going to say that out loud. It's just like, I'm going to just do the things I do.
Right.
And I think there's something to admire in an actor that like that does everything through emotion and through like through using his face, which is, you know, the actor's most valuable tool. Like there's something to be said for an actor, you know, of Matt Damon's caliber who's coming off of his hilarious comedic performance that won him a Golden Globe for The Martian, for best comedy, of course. Going from that to going to be like just, you know, sullen guy that does things, and the visual storytelling lets you know what he's going through, what actions he's doing to get things done. Like there's something to admire in that, but I do miss like him. Like there's no like, not that I need Jason Bourne to suddenly have one liners, but there's no back and forth. There's no like someone says something to Bourne and he like counters with something that's kind of quippy. Again, I don't necessarily need that, but it's like, you know what? This as much as Tommy Lee Jones is fun being Tommy Lee Jones, this could have used more something, I guess, in terms of give me a little more humanity in the film, if that makes any sense.
And they cut the film's funniest line, which would have been, Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne.
But let's see. Anything else you want to say about Jason Bourne before we wrap up and move on?
I was going to ask if you guys felt like Vikander's character was a little like wishy-washy, or if you kind of got a sense of where exactly she fell, because they kind of like made it seem like there was, you know, she was one way and she was going to appeal to Bourne's mentality throughout the majority of the film. And then at the end, you get this kind of, you know, I'm not even sure what it was, but the line at the end just bothered me about, you know, the CIA,
what her intentions are going to be.
Yeah. And her giving this proposal and him saying, that's interesting. That's an interesting proposal. And I'm like, that's what we just got done doing with Tommy Lee Jones's character. Why is that more interesting? And so that kind of makes me cautious for where they may go with this, if they go anywhere, which I'm sure they plan to do, but I don't know. I was just going to see what you guys thought about her character and where she fell in line with her relationship with Bourne.
What did you think of her performance, Zachy?
You know, I to be honest, I was missing Joan Allen in this movie.
I would agree. I think along with Julia Stiles, Joan Allen seems to be the other, you know, character in this franchise that adds something to it, to give
some continuity.
Yeah.
I thought she was fine. She didn't really blow me away in this. It just kind of, she felt like a mechanism of the plot more than anything else.
As far as the kind of relationship she has with Bourne, how that evolves, she's kind of filling that role of Pam Landy, of Joan Allen's character, where, you know, she gets attached to something reading just the facts of it. But then as she gets more involved and sees, you know, things take place and how others around the situation act, she comes over to Bourne's side, it would seem. And then, yeah, the movie kind of makes it more ambiguous as to what her like actual intentions are. I took away that it wasn't too much, it wasn't a nefarious thing she had as far as what to do with Jason Bourne. I think it was just more the movie wasn't quite sure of itself, of how they wanted to wrap things up, which I think was one of the bigger flaws as well. Like, it kind of, after you get through this giant Vegas action sequence, you have to have this kind of epilogue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sitting there counting the minutes to when Moby's Extreme Ways new remix plays. So I'm like thinking, okay, what are we going to do next year? And it kind of gets to, it's like, all right, that's what we're doing. All right. Like it kind of flounders off at the end, I would say. But yeah, it's not necessarily unclear. I just think not as well accomplished in giving me a message involving where things could go from here if there's, you know, some kind of potential leeway off for, you know, another sequel or what have you.
Yeah, I'll definitely be interested to see what they do with that. If, you know, she was just saying what she said for reasons of her company, or if it was, you know, that was actually how she felt. Because they definitely, you know, made it seem one way and then kind of doubled back there at the end. But I don't know. I'm hesitant because I do love the original trilogy, and this one was kind of, you know, a few steps back, but I don't know. I'd be interested to see it still.
I assume the next film will be, you know, Jason blank for his middle name, Bourne, will be the title. That would make sense for me. Or Jason Bourne, the Web Conspiracy. Either one.
I was going to say, the next one, yeah, it'll just be David Webb.
David Webb.
No one will know it. What?
you may know his name. That'll be the headline. All right. Well, I think we've talked sufficiently about Jason Bourne at this point. And so let's talk. When should people go and see this movie? Jordan, when should people see this movie?
That's a hard one. Part of me wants to say you should go see it in theaters, because I'd like to see the kind of series continue if they have worthwhile ideas. I know I basically said the exact opposite in my review, but I think that there are interesting directions they could come out with. I would say if you're a big fan of the original trilogy, from most of those people that I've talked to, and there's a few of us on this call, and then I have a few friends who are, they all enjoyed it quite a bit, so go see it now. If you're not a fan of the original trilogy, or it kind of didn't do much for you in the beginning, then it's fine catching this one on TV eventually.
Philip?
Yeah, I'd say for, you know, the action scenes and for that that hand-to-hand combat scene at the end, it's definitely worth seeing on the big screen. I would maybe, you know, caution people with you may want to go matinee ticket price rather than, you know, at night or on the weekend or something like that. But definitely, I think, worth on the big screen.
Zachy?
Yeah, I think if you're a fan, you should definitely check it out. But I'll echo about don't pay full price, you know, either matinee or second run, you're probably fine. You know, I wasn't crazy about the movie, but I would still like to see where it goes next. So I would still like to see another Bourne movie.
I'm largely in the same boat as far as it's lesser than those other three, but I still think it's quite good. I think it's a solid action film. Yeah. As a whole, I like this franchise. I would say other people that like this franchise would do good by seeing this movie on a big screen at least. Perhaps yeah, matinee or a dollar theater, but no, it's still a. For me, it was a solid enough entry to you know, feel worth. It was worthwhile to watch Damon and Greengrass get back together again for another Jason Bourne entry. Now, if only we get Green Zone 2, we'll see where that goes. Red Zone. All right, that was our review for Jason Bourne. Let's move on now. Before we move on to anything, let's do our sponsor real quick. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Why Audible? Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks and other similar programs for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook download of your choice with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Choose a book to download for free and just listen. That's that easy. audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. You can download a book for free. Check out the service. If you don't like the service, you can get rid of it, but you get to keep that book they download for free. So be a winner. Read or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. All right, moving on. Let's do some feedback here. Some out now feedback. This is where I go over some of the various questions and answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast. We asked a number of questions, and the listeners gave us lots of answers. Jordan, Philip, and Zachy, feel free to, you know, lend us your answers as well if you have any to these. And here we go.
Will do.
Favorite movie fist fights. Joe writes Raiders of the Lost Ark, the giant Nazi and Indiana Jones and the airplane propeller. Brad writes Keith David and Roddy Piper in They Live. How much screen time does that go on in total? It's the best. I think a good like 7 minutes. Jason writes Hobbs and Dawn fighting from Fast Five, which is better than the Martha fight from Batman v Superman. I want to call that the Martha fight from now on. That's a thing that should exist. The Martha fight from Batman Superman. Tyler writes the fight on top of the submarine in Batman the Movie 1966. Bam pow. Justin writes End of Lethal Weapon 1, so Mel Gibson versus Gary Busey. Adam writes Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse, I guess just in general, probably when he rips that guy's throat out, though. And Matt, Cool Hand Luke. That's a good fight with Paul Newman and, George Kennedy, who I think just passed away. You guys have favorite movie fist fights?
I got two off the top of my head.
Yeah?
One I'll probably get flack for, but
The Martha fight?
Just because it's so extravagant. The beach fight in Mission Impossible 2.
Oh, that's a fun
variant. Just with all the kicks and everything.
My favorite's when he kicks the sand and it makes the gun rise like 4 feet out of the ground and takes it and shoots the guy.
Yeah. That one's just so like goofy and entertaining. And when I was young and I saw that movie, I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. and now I understand physics a little bit more, so it just makes it funnier. Second one would probably be, I think it's mostly Fist, but the mud scene from the Raid 2.
Oh, yeah.
The huge, like, prison brawl. Because that thing is insane.
The Raid movies in general have a ton of, like, the fight at the end of the first Raid between the brothers and the one, like, Mad Dog, I believe.
Yeah.
And then the fight, like, in the ending of the Raid 2 where it has, like, Baseball Bat Boy and Hammer Girl versus the main guy, and followed by, like, that kitchen fight. Like, there's just crazy stuff in those movies in general.
Yeah, they're so brutal.
Any other fist fights, guys?
I gotta go with Clark Kent versus Superman in Superman 3.
Oh, good. So, evil Clark Kent versus Clark Kent? Like the...
Evil Superman versus good Clark Kent.
Yeah, okay.
The one that came off the top of my head was, and I haven't seen it in a while, but the Eric Bana fight scene in Hannah. I think Tom Hollander was the other guy in it.
The slow motion stuff?
Yeah, and I just remember being like, it just looked different than anything I'd seen prior. And that one stuck with me.
I'm a huge fan of Hannah. That's a really good movie. Let's see. Next question. We have favorite movie super assassin. Brad writes, Leon, the Professional. I've watched that. I've watched as much Jean Reno as I can since I discovered that movie 12 years ago. Adam writes, The Terminator. That's a good answer. He's a super assassin. And Philip writes, Nia Young from The Assassin. She was as cool as the other side of the pillow. Okay. As cool as the other side. Okay. You made a joke. Favorite super assassins?
The Winter Soldier.
There you go.
That's a good one. I will say, maybe not my favorite, but one that comes off the top of my head is John Wick.
Yeah.
I don't know. So Tom Cruise and Collateral would count, right?
Yeah.
Well, like
super
that.
Assassin. That's
okay. Maybe Michael Fassbender this year. I don't know.
Oh,
I haven't
Assassin's
played the
Creed?
Game, so is that a fair?
Well,
let's
see.
So.
We'll see. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
We'll see. Favorite movie dealing with one's identity or lack thereof? Joe writes Fight Club. Jason writes Batman v Superman. Manish writes Under the Skin. Adam writes James Bond. And Philip writes When Marnie Was There. I'll go with that Fight Club answer. That's a fun one.
Ex Machina.
There you go. I can keep moving. Favorite Matt Damon performance. Jason writes, best performance in a comedy. It's a tie between Ocean's 11 and Dogma. You thought I was going to say The Martian, didn't you? Action film, The Bourne films, drama, The Departed. Manish writes, I added the accent. Although if you wrote it, I would have been pleased by that. Manish writes, The Adjustment Bureau, just to mix it up. Susan writes, does I'm effing Matt Damon count? Adam writes, I had a tie between, that's the Sarah Silverman, Jimmy Kimmel skit thing. Adam writes, I had a tie between The Departed and The Talented Mr. Ripley. April writes, The Martian. Joe writes, Carol on 30 Rock. And Philip writes, LaBeouf in True Grit.
There's no Interstellar in there?
No one wrote Interstellar, no.
I'm going to say Good Will Hunting 2, Hunting Season.
Applesauce. I like The Departed. I think he's great in The Departed. I think that's a great all-around Matt Damon performance. Yeah. I really like The Informant, too. Not my favorite, but I like The Informant, the Steven Soderbergh.
Oh, man. I forget about The Informant.
I completely forgot about that movie.
That's a really just like. There's a lot being done there that he doesn't get credit for that movie.
Yeah, agreed.
Him with Soderbergh in general is pretty fun, I think.
Yeah. Contagion, I mean, doesn't have
a lot
to do with
Contagion, he plays just like regular dad, but he's like really good as just regular dad.
Man, I'm going to go watch The Informant after we're done here.
let's see. Who would you want to see Jason Bourne fight? Joe writes Will Hunting. April writes John Wick. Jason writes Ben Affleck's Batman. Manish writes Furiosa. Oh, there's a good fist fight, by the way. Philip writes Clubber Lang, which is probably the best answer I could have gotten out of this one. Who do you want to see Jason Bourne fight?
I'd say Daniel Craig's James Bond, since they're mirror images of each other.
They'd counter each other's moves. You just wouldn't get out there.
Just an endless counter fight.
Okay, last question we have. What random object should Jason Bourne fight with next? Jason writes bubble wrap because it would make the fight pop. Philip writes a conveyor belt of chocolates. Scott writes a spork. April writes a box of cereal. And Joe writes a rubber chicken. That makes sense. I can see that happen. There's like a toy store. Jason Bourne pulls out a rubber chicken and starts beating the guy. all right. Next, now we have some questions here. Questions from you guys to answer. You guys feel free to chime in as well. Philip asks, what do you typically find more interesting, seeing something when it was done for the first time in film or later on when it's perfected? That's an interesting question.
Wow.
There's certainly something to be said for any time you see something you haven't seen before in a film. There's no question about that, especially when it's something visually impressive or something neat done with a camera or what have you. When it's perfected, that's, obviously it's going to look as good as possible. So I guess it comes down to what kind of appreciation you take away from, a debut of something versus seeing the best version of that something.
Yeah, and when it debuts, you could probably think of what more you could do with it, or that might come to you later, but... initially seeing it, you're not like, if it strikes you as something like, wow, that's awesome, I've never seen that before, you're not going to be thinking, oh, that could probably be done better. So yeah, I seeing something new the first time would probably outweigh. Well,
the best example I can think of is The Matrix, where The Matrix showed you a lot of kind of visual effects for that, the use of like the multi cameras to circle around things. That was a new idea at that time, and something or at least for modern film, and you hadn't seen that before, so that was a that's a really cool thing. And, obviously there's a lot of imitators since then, and I can't say that there's been anyone that mimicked The Matrix that was like, that was cooler than The Matrix as far as seeing that exact kind of effect being pulled off.
That's a difficult one, because I feel like if you see the perfected version first, if you have one movie that brought it first, and then you have one movie that perfected it, and you see the perfected version, then you go back to the first time that it ever happened, maybe you weren't alive or you weren't in the theater the first time it ever happened, you go back to that original one and it's not impressive at all. I know there's been a lot of older films I've caught up with where I'm like, this is very overrated. I kind of lean towards it perfected.
Exactly.
But I don't know. It's a hard one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about, like, for example, seeing CGI to make actors look younger, and I remember being really impressed when I saw that effect in X-Men: The Last Stand, and then
and then
you look at what they did with Michael Douglas in Ant-Man last year, and that, to me, that's like the perfected version of that.
Which that goes back and forth to me. That effect goes back and forth, and not just in general, because it's like, The Last Stand, it looked seeing McKellen and Stewart younger is like, oh, that's neat. That's a neat thing they did. But then it's like X-Men Origins Wolverine happened, where they tried the same thing. It's like, what, does this look awful? It's like, why a year, 2 years later does this look like horrible? Which is strange. But then you're like, like you said, the Michael Douglas thing in Ant-Man, one thing, I didn't see that coming. So it's like, oh, that's neat. Like, that's really good. Then this year you have Robert Downey Jr. in Civil War making them look younger. That one didn't work as well for me. And it's not a matter of it didn't look bad necessarily, just looked like, I don't know, obvious, maybe, I don't know how to describe it, but it just it seemed like the Michael Douglas thing seemed more simple, I guess. This was trying to make it more complicated of him like moving around and doing stuff, and it didn't ring true.
I can see that,
which I guess you can argue is because it's a piece of technology he invented to show that, as opposed to it just being an actual flashback to a different time,
right?
But no, I mean, yeah, the idea of de-aging people. Yeah, I think they did it a little bit in Bourne too, if I'm not mistaken. I think they tried to.
Damon look younger. Yeah.
Yeah, like it didn't just look like he put on that classic young Matt Damon wig that we all know and love. They actually like tried to CGI his face a bit. But yeah, all right, good question. Next question from Jason: since Ben is Batman, what superhero or supervillain do you think Matt Damon should play? I really think he would make an awesome Green Arrow. You guys have any thoughts on what Matt Damon could play in the world of Ben Affleck being Batman?
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like I saw something about him playing Green Arrow, and
I would love that.
Yeah, and I think there was something with him and Kevin Smith, and he like read a line or something like that from a Green Arrow comic, or a comic that included Green Arrow. And yeah, no, that would be awesome.
I could have, if they didn't already, roid it out with Jason Momoa as Aquaman. I think Damon from what's the Liberace movie? His look in that movie could have made a good Aquaman. All right.
I said Dane for that. I want to see them fight.
Yeah. Make him, I don't know, make a, what villain, what Batman villain could he play? Let's see.
Catman.
Did you say Clayface?
Clayface. And like, yeah, Matt Damon form, and then he like gets all big.
Yeah.
Clayface. Sure,
Matt Damon, Matt Hagen, that works.
See, make it work. Yeah. All right. That was enough feedback. Let's move on now to, I think it's time for us to play some games.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. I got Powell in to do that one, actually. It was great. That was, of course, the improv theme for games. And I have a game for the three of you this week. It is called He Beat Him With What? This is a game where... okay, so I've written down coffee pot, magazine, book, and pen. These are all weapons Jason Bourne has used to beat people up in the past with. I'm going to describe a movie based around one of these items, and you have to guess what movie it is.
Hmm.
As well as the item, coffee pot, magazine, book, or pen. And so I'm going to read a description of a movie based around one of these items, and you'll have to guess the movie. You can buzz in with your names and be like, Philip, this, that kind of thing. Gotcha. You guys got it?
Got it.
Let's do it.
All right. A lot of these are modern, because I use the IMDb keyword search, and so those movies came up first. So it'll make it a little easier, maybe. Okay. This item served as a holding tank as she was moved across an aquatic rehabilitation center.
Oh.
Jordan.
Finding Dory.
Finding Dory
is the correct answer.
Oh.
She's in a coffee pot, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Here's the next one. Due to a 24-hour curse, we must all acknowledge the color ink of this item is royal blue.
Philip. Liar
is the correct answer. It's a pen.
Yeah.
Remember when Jason Bourne beat that guy with the pen? This missing person was the subject of many amazing Amy stories in these items.
Jordan. Gone Girl
is the correct answer.
Jeez, doing terrible.
Here's the next one. Be careful drinking the caffeinated beverage during the cold blizzard when you have 8 strangers around you. Be careful drinking this caffeinated beverage during a cold blizzard when you have 8 strangers around you.
For some reason, I want to say The Gray, but I know that's not it.
Oh, all of you guys. Okay, the answer the answer was The Hateful Eight.
Oh.
Next one. Zach, you got to get on the board.
I know, man. It's embarrassing.
With half an hour before a big presentation, don't trouble this iconic man with the wrong computer image on the cover.
Jordan. Steve Jobs
is the correct answer. Magazine.
The Michael Fassbender version.
Yes, not the Ashton Kutcher version. or the Justin Long Funny or Die version. One more thing. Enjoy the story this uncle reads his nephew. Oh, I should say that again. One more thing. Enjoy the story this uncle reads his nephew.
Jordan. The Princess Bride?
Princess Bride is the correct answer. Jordan, you're killing it.
Yeah.
Here's the next one. If you realize the truth, try to get a better grip on your cup, or else it may drop and break in slow motion.
Zachy.
Yeah.
I would say wrongfully accused.
Wrongfully accused? No. The Leslie Nielsen spoof movie?
Yes.
One
what
of would
the
it
best
be spoofing?
Non-Naked Gun Leslie.
What would it be spoofing? If you realize the truth, try to get a better grip on your cup, or else it may drop and break in slow motion. Okay, it is The Usual Suspects.
I'm still going to stick with Wrongfully Accused.
Which is spoofing that movie. No one's mentioned The Wrongfully Accused in years.
I should get points for a deep cut. That's
yeah,
what I
deep,
say.
Deep cut point, yeah. This creepy story was found and destroyed only to be found again by a mother going through grief. This creepy story was found and destroyed only to be found again by a mother going through grief.
Jordan?
Yep.
I haven't seen this film, but is it The Babadook?
It is The Babadook. He hasn't even seen the film, guys!
Yeah,
it all right. Sounds like the plot synopsis.
Here's the next one. Working for this kind of publication, may you find you working for an unrecognizable Tilda Swinton.
Oh, Zachy.
Train wreck. Train wreck is the correct answer. Zachy's on the board.
Hey!
Got two more. This story within a story tells the tale of a manager and his lobby boy.
Philip.
Oh, Zach.
Dyer Philip.
Yeah, sorry. Grand Budapest.
That is correct.
Darn it.
Sorry, Zach.
That's a book. Last one. If you're being threatened on a plane, this item could come in handy to take care of one's personal, take care of a person's vocal cords. I'll say that again. If you're being threatened on a plane, this item could come in handy to take care of a person's vocal cord.
Why do I not know this?
Zachy?
Yeah?
Air Force One?
Nope.
Jordan?
Yeah?
Snakes on a plane?
Nope.
Damn it.
We're narrowing down plane thrillers. You got a guess?
I was going to say, I should have a guess here, but I can't.
Zachy?
Yeah.
Passenger, what's the Wesley Snipes movie?
Passenger 57.
Is that the one?
That no, it's not it.
Damn it.
The answer is Red Eye.
Okay, you know.
All right. So with that done, Zachy, you've come in third place.
Philip, I'm on the board, though.
You were on the board. Philip, you came in second place. But it is Jordan who is our winner this week. Well done, Jordan.
Thank you.
All right. That was games. Let's move on now. Let's get to Out Now, Presidential Town Now. These movies that are coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week, and we got quite a few here. Let's see. Batman the Killing Joke, which we talked about a little bit already. Not great. Keanu. Anyone see Keanu?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes? Fans? No?
That's my review.
Yeah, it was fine. I was expecting more from it, but exactly.
It was a one-time view for me. I don't need to see it again.
The Lobster. I was a big fan of The Lobster.
You know, I wasn't a huge fan. Like initially, like I liked it and it was fine, but I could not stop thinking about that movie like days after I saw it. So I'm definitely gonna watch it again this week.
Let's see, The Bronze. This was a comedy that came out, I believe, from with Melissa Rauch.
I did see that one. It was meh.
Monster Hunt. This is a huge film in China, I believe. Let's see. High Rise with Tom Hiddleston.
Did you like that one?
I wasn't a fan.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I felt like I was in the minority on that one, but I just
seems like it was mixed overall. But like some people really liked and some people were like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Let's see. Manhattan Night. I believe this is the film directed by Adrian Brody. Let's see. The Trust. Which one's this? Why did I write this down? Anyone know The Trust? What this movie is?
I haven't heard of it.
I'm not sure, yeah.
Oh, so Nicolas Cage and Elijah Wood. So it's something that went right to video, but it has Nicolas Cage in it, so I'm required to say it out loud. let's see. Mother's Day from the late Gary Shandling. The late Gary Marshall. Too many Garys are dying this year, guys. It's sad. Let's see. April and the Extraordinary World. This is an animated film, I believe. Invasion of the Body Snatchers Collector's Edition from Scream Factory. This is the 78 version, which with Donald Sutherland, which is a terrific sci-fi horror film.
It's a great movie.
Let's see. Blacklist Season 3 for fans of that show. The Nick Season 2 for those that want to know what Soderbergh's up to. Blind Spot Season 1. Probably for people that also like The Blacklist. The Girlfriend Experience Season 1, from people that kind of want to know what Steven Soderbergh's executive producing these days. Laser Team, this is a YouTube Red film, like online movie thing. And The Mark of Zorro, classic Zorro film. That's now on Blu-ray as well. A lot of stuff, like I said. That's what's out now. That's out now. What presents out now? Next up, extremely cool. These movies that are coming that are now on Netflix that are available for streaming. Not much new. I know BoJack Horseman season 3 came out last week, which we mentioned on the show. If you're a fan of that show, it's one to catch up with. But I did notice a couple things. Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift is now on Netflix. That happens to be one of my favorites of the series. So one of my favorites of the series. So I recommend that one. Sleepy Hollow from Tim Burton, one of my favorite Tim Burton films, is now on Netflix. And next Friday, The Little Prince makes its debut on Netflix. This was the adaptation of the story The Little Prince, which was going to be released in theaters in this past March, but then got kind of axed from Paramount's thing, and Netflix picked it up, and now it's going to be seen for all. So anyone that's interested in The Little Prince and wants to know what happened to it, it's coming out to Netflix this Friday. I'll probably see it by that point with my lovely girlfriend. We're really looking forward to that movie, and then it got pulled, so there you go. Let's see, next week's show. Next week, we are talking Suicide Squad, and it is the 250th episode, so Abe will be back, and we'll have something special in store for sure on that one. 250.
Wow, congratulations.
Congratulations.
This for a while, it seems. Last thing we do here, what should people go and see now, and what do you plan to see next? Jordan Rath, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
I would say Jason Bourne, but I will put an addendum to that people should really watch Stranger Things.
There you go.
I quite love that series. And then what I'll be seeing next is 100% Suicide Squad, unless I go see Nerve today, but that may or may not happen.
Philip Price, what should people go and see now? What do you plan to see next?
Yeah, in theaters, I would say, you know, just because of how much pure fun it was, I would say see Star Trek Beyond on the big screen. I would probably recommend that over Born as far as spending money on at the movies goes. But if you want to stay home, Sing Street came out this past week, and I love that movie, and you should definitely rent that and watch it. But yeah, I'd like to see Captain Fantastic just open in my area, so I'd like to see that.
That's a good one.
But yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to it, so hope to make it to see that, but definitely Suicide Squad this next week.
Zach Yusan, what should people go and see now? What do you plan to see next?
Yeah, I want to echo the recommendation for Star Trek Beyond. I think it's a great theater movie. You know, it's not doing as well as it could be, and I think it's unfortunate because I actually do think it's a really, it's a fun time, and it's worth checking out in the theater. And yeah, I'm seeing Suicide Squad tomorrow, so that's next for me.
Jealous.
I'm going to continue to recommend Hunt for the Wilder People. I think that movie is fantastic, and it's really fun, and it's small, and it deserves more money. So that's one I want to keep recommending. And yeah, Suicide Squad is next for me on the docket as well. I'll be seeing that a little later this week. So yeah, that's going to do it this week for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. You can find all my written movie reviews there. You can also find me writing daily on Screen Rant, as well as on Twitter, at Aaron's PS4. Jordan Rath, where can people find more of your work online?
People can find more of my work online on rathsreviews.com. I do new movie reviews, video game reviews, and older movie reviews there. Facebook, basically just Google search Rath's Reviews, R-A-T-H, and you will be successful in finding it.
There you go. Philip Price.
Yeah, you can find my written reviews at reviewsfromabed.com, and you can also find me on YouTube. A good friend of mine and I do a weekly show called Initial Reaction Reviews. We review movies in the theater right after seeing them and give you our initial reaction. So definitely check that out and subscribe if you can.
It's a fun show. Zachy is on.
My reviews go up at zackyscorner.com, that's Z-A-K-I-S corner, and also at the Huffington Post. And I host the Movie Film Podcast. I also host a show called Nostalgia Theater. And I have a fun episode dropping on Tuesday where I talk with Ralph Garman of K-Rock about the Batman 1966 TV series.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a fun one. I think people are really going to enjoy listening to that one.
Being a SoCal local, I'm very aware of who Ralph Garman is.
So oh, perfect. Like... Yeah, so I mean, talking to him was like a bucket list moment for me.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe over on iTunes as well as on Audio Boom. You can also find older episodes over at Podomatic, SoundCloud, and hhwlod.com. You can find our you can email us your thoughts on Jason Bourne or anything else we talked about this week over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/outnowpodcast and twitter.com/outnow_podcast. And if you so desire to join our Tumblr page for whatever reason, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. Jordan, Philip, and Zachy, thank you all for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to talk some Bourne with you. Glad to play some games. Congratulations, Jordan, for outwitting everyone else in these games. Zachy, better luck next time. Philip, you keep marching to the beat of your own drum. You're doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you guys. And until next week when we celebrate our 250th episode. What are Abe and I doing? 250 episodes of this. That's going to do it for this week. So long and goodbye.
Oh, babe, when it fell apart, it fell apart.
Good God, it's Jason Bourne.
Exactly. Anna and I watched like all the Bourne movies this past 2 weeks, and they definitely have characters that say something around that every single time, and it humors me all the time. It's the greatest thing.
It's so fun.
Were you guys disappointed that that wasn't in the movie, though?
Well, I mean, I did it anyway, so I did.
Oh, okay.
It didn't matter to me. I was like, just that black guy.
I was waiting for it when he didn't say it. I was just like, oh, no, there's no way they're going to cut it.